Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Happy hump night from somewhere in middle America. Hope you guys are all doing well. Starting to get chilly here. I think winter might be setting in, but I guess it's about that time, right? I really have to move out of here one day. Faux show. Boy, it's been a really busy week for me, so I'm kind of slow today, but for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. I'm your host, Kim Justice, and if you want to know more about me, check out my website, inaflash.on Facebook at inaflash.org. Not too tough, they're both the same on Facebook and my own website. Also, if you come in, well, late to this show, all of our on-demand episodes, after the shows air live, they go on demand at braininjuryradio.com. And my shows on also under the show tab on inaflash.org. So a couple different places you can find them. Shows that are coming up or posted the week of that show in both of those places under upcoming, and then on demand after about an hour after the show has ended. So I want to welcome you all here tonight. I was going to talk a little bit about TBI and substance abuse. Substance abuse swirls around all the angles of traumatic brain injury. Some TBIs are incurred while under the influence. Some addictive disorders are stoked by self-medication starting during brain injury treatment, and yet others are as a result of self-medicating after the TBI. Life changes happen after brain injury that we often don't have productive tools to deal with that can lead to some dire consequences. With faith, determination to adapt, the proper tools and support, these outcomes can change from the dark side to creating a life worth living. I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight because a couple different reasons. Because it is so prevalent, for one, and for another, I'm having a little celebration tonight, and tonight it's been 34 years. I can't believe it. 34 years since I've used substances. And that's a really good thing. Now, in my case, I had been clean and sober for 7 years when I got my brain injury. And one of the things in my case I can tell you was really, really good was that in that 7 years, I had had a chance to build a super solid support group. So I had a support group around me, and I had developed a relationship with a higher power, who I choose to call God. There's a lot of times we're into control, and we think that our shoulders are broad enough to handle everything that comes up, or the inverse, we don't think we can handle these changes. And after brain injury, not only do a lot of us not look the same for a while, and that's bad. I mean, those of you who have had a craniotomy or some kind of surgery know that right after, you don't recognize yourself. First of all, you don't know what that heck happened, and then you don't recognize yourself physically. A lot of us go back to heal back to what we call the silent epidemic. It's where we look normal. We look like we did before after some period of time. And our expectation and the expectation of those around us is that broken. It was serious. And now we're fixed. And there's an expectation out of all of us that we're going to go back to being the same person we were before. And a small percentage of people do that. And then there's another large percentage of people who don't do that. Because once you've had a traumatic brain injury, it's kind of inherent in the name traumatic. After a serious trauma, you can't unring the bell. It's happened, and it's made a deep and lasting impression. Not only the event, but the residuals that we walk away with, whether that's short-term memory loss, depression, PTS, or other anxiety-type disorders, sleep disorders, sensory overload where things that are too loud or too bright bother us. We might have been a person who was high energy and able to juggle 10 balls in the air at the same time. Now if we tried to do that, we'd incur another brain injury because they'd all come down on our head. We need to focus intently on what we're doing in order to accomplish it. And if we get too many things going, we a lot of times don't finish or wind up doing them half-assed, not with the level of precision that we might have done them before our brain injury. And so there's a whole process involved in recovery. It's not a destination, it's a journey. So as much as we'd like things to change fast, they usually don't. And there's some stumbling blocks in the way on the road to recovery. And some of those are triggers, things that make us remind us of our brain injury or remind us of a substance abuse issue that makes us want to numb ourselves. We don't like the way that we feel, can't cope with the way we feel, don't have the tools to deal with how we're feeling. And so many people will start self-medicating after a brain injury. Now, in my case, I didn't do that. Like I said, I was very blessed from the standpoint that after 7 years, I had built a very solid support system before I had my brain injury. Again, a relationship with God so that I knew I wasn't in it alone. My friends understood the substance abuse, but they didn't understand the brain injury. Nonetheless, they did understand me, and they did see the differences in me, and inherent in the substance abuse recovery was a certain level of acceptance and understanding and patience, if a person was working their own program properly, to be able to allow that to their friend who'd been traveling on the same road and suddenly had a new challenge in their brain injury. They might not understand it completely, but they were one group of people who were willing to listen and at least show compassion and forget from time to time that you weren't the you that you were when they met you 7 years ago, but then you weren't, in my case, I wasn't anyway, because I had changed a lot in that 7 years when I changed my life, and I was going to go through another change in my life, and that's one thing that people understood. Now, for others, their substance abuse problem might start when they're in the hospital. A lot of pain issues, chronic pain is another thing that often comes in back of a brain injury. And whether it's that or when you're in the hospital, the medication that they give you for the pain, and depending on how long ago and who your doctor was, they were handing out Oxy and addictive painkillers like they were candy, and you were in so much pain, you were willing to take them just to get the pain to stop. You just didn't want to feel like that, and you didn't want to think about the nightmare that you had just been through. So you took those pills, and without knowing it, built a new kind of nightmare, or were laying the bricks and cementing them in to give a whole new kind of game-changing issue in your life to go along with your brain injury. Not only were you coping with your brain injury, but now coping with addiction. And many people carry out that self-medicating after they're out of the hospital, and maybe treatment while you were in the hospital and quit taking the pain medication and went out there and thought you were ready to go back to your life. You were looking better. You were feeling better. But slowly the feeling that you weren't the same was coming through, and that you didn't recognize the way that you were feeling, acting, reacting, might have had a worse temper, might have been depressed, might have had anxiety, a lot of different things that maybe weren't character traits before. And so hard to recognize yourself. And there you are again, feeling isolated, polarized and alone yourself, and alienating a lot of relationships around you, because face it, it's really hard to explain the effects of brain injury to ourselves. A lot of times the doctors didn't do a very good job about the after. They did a good job saving our life, but not maybe a good job about what we may have to deal with after. And then when we were dealing with it, coming back to see them, and what can I do about this, 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 and this, the doctor or the surgeon really didn't know. If there was some therapy that applied, they'd send you to therapy. If there wasn't anything else that they could think of, then they'd send you to a shrink. Now, I'm not going to put that down completely because we need to be able to have someone to talk to about these game-changing events. And a lot of times, you know, we feel like we don't want to bring our friends or our family down, that they wouldn't understand. And so sometimes it's good to go to somebody neutral who gets paid to sit there and listen to people objectively who don't have a dog in the fight. And we can dump our emotional trash and not risk it hurting or alienating or making a friend, loved one, someone close to us that we care about change their mind about us. There's always that fear. If we're open, you know, even people who haven't suffered a brain injury or had substance abuse wonder sometimes if they're good enough, if they're honest about who they are, if they'll be liked, if they'll still be liked. That goes on with everyone from time to time, at least most people, unless they're just innately a narcissist and they don't care. Most of us have had those moments. But boy, you add a traumatic brain injury and substance abuse on top of that, and it's even more so. If you didn't know that you were going to alienate friends, family, people who were good to have in your life, you wind up finding out. Because when you act like an idiot, that's what you attract to your life, is other idiots, I guess. Not that they're not God's children, not that they are not loved, but, you know, sometimes people have to love you from a distance, because you're just too hard to handle in the here and now, in the close up. And so hopefully they pray for you, but they just can't be around you, whether they're related or they were a bestie, or maybe someone you just met. They're just not able to be around us. And so we need to find some balance and some new boundaries in our life. When I talked about juggling the balls, one of those boundaries is knowing what I can accomplish and what I can't. Now, before COVID, it was different. I'm going to talk pre-COVID. You know, it's weird. We talk about post 9/11 or before 9/11, and now, you know, we'll be talking about pre-COVID and post-COVID. But back when I was out and about all the time, if I was invited to a wedding on Friday and somebody's birthday party on Saturday and maybe a family dinner on Sunday, you know, before my brain injury, those things were a piece of cake. I was full of action and life, and I did all those things. I juggled all those balls and had a great time. After my brain injury, before I knew that I was going to have some limitations, I still said yes to everything. And when I did that, I came to find out that, wow, I shouldn't have said yes to all three of those events, boom, 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 right in a row, because after doing the first event on the first night, I was worn out the next day and not ready to go about the pace of life that I had before my brain injury. I had to learn to pace myself a little bit better, because when I would do pre-brain injury things like go to the wedding on Friday, the birthday party on Saturday, the family dinner on Sunday, I found that the more exhausted I got myself, the more my symptoms would start screaming. And whether that be a headache or my chronic pain flaring, or being so exhausted, I just wanted to lay down and sleep for days, but was either too wired to do that, or I actually did that, and then I wasn't able to make it to the other commitments that I had set up. So the boundaries is about learning how far you can go, you know, how far you're able to go without it affecting your competence in what you're doing, your relationships. You know, if you keep making plans with somebody and you don't come time and time again, you either don't show up or, you know, then you learn to, you know, make apologies and not make it. But, you know, you find that you can't be relied upon to be that friend that makes it, or that employee who's able to make it through the commitments you make. And it's not because you don't want to. You used to do it all the time prior to your brain injury. But afterward, not knowing and still saying yes, and then finding out that your body was going to say no, it takes a long time and a process to learn that. And so boundaries are very important. And I've talked to different, you know, people, even other hosts around here, and even after knowing that for a long time after the brain injury, we still have a tendency, a lot of us, to default and to still say yes too often until we make ourselves so sick we can't say yes. And in the case of those who indulge in substance abuse, a lot of times that's because of the disappointment and the frustration of not being able to be who you were before. And one of the things that happens, though, when you use that elixir as an escape so that you don't have those bad feelings about yourself and about life and about the fact that you can't keep your commitments and about the fact that you've changed and you didn't want to change. You were perfectly happy with your life before. Whether it was good or bad, it was what you were used to. And now you're in new territory, treading water and hating that feeling. So a lot of people will self-medicate. But when you do that, self-medicating, it blocks the light of the spirit. It blocks the light and the clarity of being able to productively build a life worth living through things like service, recognizing that for every door that closed on your life that you're upset about, that there truly is others out there that are going to open, that you need to be able to muster the faith and then be honest with yourself, open-minded and willing to take action and try those things. I know a lot of people who have tried for jobs or hobbies and they've been convinced they weren't going to be able to do it. And that stopped a lot of people, kept them using substances and slowed down living life and their chance to be happy and try new things and be able to redefine in a positive way who you are as a person after this game-changing event. And so the only way we can really do that is by letting go of a life raft that actually has some flaws in it, some seams that are getting ready to burst and sink us. And that's what happens when we treat our TBI with substance abuse, is that, again, inherent in the names, traumatic brain injury. You've been through a trauma, substance abuse, and now you're choosing to abuse your traumatic self. Now, just by looking at the basics of those words, what do you think the outcome's going to be? And the part that I think is really sad is that a lot of people don't make it through their brain injuries, right? And so those that do, whether they feel like they're blessed or not, we are, because we get a second chance or maybe a third chance to be able to build a life worth living. And if we're masking or abusing substances, self-medicating, then it just sets us back and jeopardizes that second chance we've been given by risking losing our life, literally, or our quality of life to the substances. And when we do that, and it quits working, quits making us feel better, quits numbing us, and we start racking up consequences, both from our brain injury and our substance abuse, like those personality changes, the anger, the resentment, the alienation, the depression. Alcohol is a depressant. Oxy and those things are narcotics, they're depressants. Other things that people get into these days, as far as drugs go, are the other direction. They're not depressants. They're speedy. And if chronic tiredness is something that you have, that's another way you can get in trouble after your brain injury, is that some of these drugs will lead you to, for example, cocaine. A lot of people who have had aneurysms have had a history of cocaine abuse or sudden heart attacks at a young age, much younger than they would have. They would have, even if it runs in the family. So there's so many bad outcomes that linked on top of a brain that's already damaged, damage it further, that having a TBI and indulging in substance abuse as your solution just isn't the right solution. And so that was one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight. And I also wanted to say that if you do Facebook, and I'm not regulated here on radio about what I can say about Facebook, but as much as I strongly dislike them, there are some wonderful support groups on Facebook. And when I had my brain injury and went through some of these things, the internet wasn't even alive yet. And social media was way off. Well, now it's here. You know, now it's here. And preferably without a cocktail or a drug, you get on Facebook and go to some of these support groups. And there's a really great one called TBI and Substance Abuse. The title of the show, right? Tonight. And they have tens of thousands of members. Blaine is one of the administrators. George is one of the administrators. And they're really great guys. And there's a lot of people in that group who are really wonderful. They're well-versed in brain injury and well-versed in substance abuse, whether it's the before, the during, or the after, or all of those, when it comes to their brain injury and their substance abuse. And so many stories there. So if you're listening tonight and that's a struggle that you're having with your brain injury, there's one place that you can go if you do social media. Otherwise, I would recommend a support group, and in that case, you might need two, right? Perhaps 12-step program for substance abuse. People have dealt with that other ways. The 12-step programs happen to be the most successful way. The odds aren't very good when you've dug yourself a deep hole, no matter what method you use. But I will tell you that treatment isn't meant to be the cure. Treatment gives you a chance to dry out and to think about what your solution action is going to be. Are you going to start going to 12-step meetings, some other kind of support group, a church group? Whatever your solutions-oriented outcome is going to be. I wish that something like 30 days of treatment took it all away. But if you're truly an addictive personality, it doesn't. It simply gives you a chance to dry out long enough to get to the right place. Brain injury, there's some support groups, and the same with the others. Some are good and some are not so good, but there's a lot of them around. So another thing I encourage people is that don't ever just go to one meeting and if you don't like it, say this isn't for me and never go back. I say give a meeting 3 to 5 chances before you decide, because groups have personalities just like individuals have personalities. And so, hang on, I think I just had a caller. Let me double check here. Sorry about that. In any case, the number, if you want to call in, this is probably a good time to say that. A couple people did have their hands up, and I'm not sure if the switchboard just dropped them or I didn't pick them up quick enough. Apologies for that. But the number is 424-243-9540. 424-243-9540. And I encourage you to call in if you're somebody who has a brain injury and you've struggled with substance abuse and you still are, or you've found some solutions-based things that help you, then certainly call in. In any case, going to take a quick break for just a moment. I was thinking about somebody today, and this person had an issue at one time. both issues, as a matter of fact. And he wound up, it was a prophecy, actually. One night I was interviewing him and he told a story and he said that he had dreamed about how he was going to die. And he had ready, he already had his brain injury, had had it for years. And I thought, how odd. And he told us all about a dream. This is actually in an archive show. Sorry. You guys should call in. I can't text. Anyway, this man was a darling soul, had gotten past his addictions, had been living with his brain injury for many, many years, was one of the most kindest giving people. Big old teddy bear, huge, tall, big guy, but just a teddy bear personality. An animal lover like me, those of you who know me. And he sat here on the show and said he had dreamt about his death. And he told us about it on the air. He dreamed, because he couldn't drive anymore, he wrote that he would get hit by a car riding his bike. And oddly, a year later, almost to the day, I was watching the news one night, and he lived in a town about 50 miles away from me. And it showed a terrible accident that had happened where a vehicle had hit a man on a bike and killed him. And it was this guy, brokenhearted. He used to be at the show, my show, every Wednesday night. I've been doing this for 10 and a half years, every Wednesday night. And he used to be here, and yet he prophesized his own death. I'm going to play this song real quick because truly this is what we're all doing and we want to make the most of it. This is called Passing Through, and then I'll be right back. And if you'd like to talk about anything that's on your mind, hopefully that was a little food for thought. And I do have a caller later. Oh, I do have a caller now. And so I'm going to take caller. Don't go anywhere. Give me this 3 minutes. I was giving you time to call. So I'm going to play this song really fast and you're going to remember this person also. Later, I've got someone calling in to talk about their substance abuse problem. But in the meantime, got someone to talk to that I miss a lot. So in 3 minutes, I'm going to bring you on. Les?
You ready to go?
But
come on,
first,
Wack, let's go, boy.
Used to have a family, paying union dues, working all day on construction crew. When I lost my tools, then the whistle blew. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing. Leave my home and family was on a lonely road. Signs kept telling me far away place to go. Winds changed my destiny. How was I to know? Can't I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la. I'm only passing through. I followed the yellow brick road to the end of a rainbow. A woman standing there living on the dole. She looked away and said, this road has a heavy toll. I can't say I'm saying, I'm only passing through. La la la. La 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 la, I'm only passing through. I've been wandering aimlessly in this wilderness. 15 years behind me, supposed to be my best. Need a light to see, guide me to my rest. I can't say I'm saying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I'm only
That was Alan Kitto, and I think of him often. My thoughts and prayers go out to him, and one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I hate Facebook is that when they took away my page for no reason, March of 2020, right when the pandemic started, Alan and I had been friends, and he had died a couple years before, but it always shows you the birthdays. And I would go to his page and wish him happy birthday. That's a friendship I'm never going to get back. And there was a few of those. But anyway, Alan was a really wonderful guy. He was here all the
time.
You
ready to go? Come on, Wigwack. Let's
Whoa.
Go, boy.
Such a good song. I thought I'd play it again. Let me get my cursor over to the other side of the studio. And another person who is very much alive, although he's been going through a lot of health struggles, is another one of our hosts, our second and fourth Tuesday of each month host, Les. I'm going to bring him on. Been a long time since we've talked. How you doing, Les?
Wow. And when I heard him, it put such a lump in my throat, I couldn't talk. I said, oh, God, I'm not going to be able to talk. I remember him well. Megan remembers him. And when I heard that song and I heard the harmonica and the dog barking, I just about started crying. And like, oh, my gosh, I remember talking to him. Whew. So,
me too. Remember he worked at the laundry a couple nights a week and he'd call us from the laundromat?
Yes.
On the show, he happened to work there, but then he'd ride his bike to a piano bar across town. He did play piano, and he'd sing for people, and just such a kind guy, and I was really blessed to get to meet him.
He
lives in our capital city, about 50 miles away, but he came to Omaha once and called me, and I got to actually meet him, and he was such a huge guy. Alan must have been 6'5", and he was a big guy, but just such a teddy bear, which you guys who listened to him all would have known, you know, what a kind, sweet man, you know, he was. And I don't know if you were on the line yet or not when I said, but everyone else was, so I won't prolong it. But it was just so bizarre because He was on the show one night and talked about a dream he had where he predicted, he didn't predict, but he dreamed about his death.
I remember that. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, he dreamed that because he couldn't drive and rode
he
his
sure
bike
did.
Everywhere, that someone was going to hit him. And it was like a year to the day almost. And that's on tape. You know, that story is on tape somewhere in our archive.
Well,
where he predicted it. And I was sitting there watching the news one night, and it showed an accident that had happened, and that was the accident, him being killed exactly the way he prophesied. So anyway, how are you doing? You've been really struggling with illness, but you sound so much better than I talked
I'm
to you last.
I'm finally doing better, although I've had so many different things. Do you have time for me to share a little bit of it? I mean, I will if you want. I don't want to interrupt anyone or anything, but go
no,
ahead.
I got all the time in the world. Well, I got an hour and a half. Maybe not all the time in the world, but an hour and a half.
Well, the first thing you know about is the kidney stones that I had.
Yes.
Those two kidney stones. And seven visits and seven attempts to remove them, and one has been removed in seven. And I've got something like $25,000 worth of doctor bills on just one kidney stone. And it was torture what they kept doing over and over and over and over and over at different locations. I like the university health system in our area, university hospital, but they would send me to different locations, and one after the other, I know we've got it this time, we're going to put you to sleep again and again and again and again, until I was so exhausted, I could barely drive my car to work when I went to work, when I missed a month and a half altogether in about 2.5 months. And
wow.
I miss a lot of at work. It was just one roller coaster with that. And something about brain injury radio, I'll share that part. One thing I can say about you and I, besides being very good friends, we've always been people to share a lot of our story. Well,
yeah.
I never understood how extensive my brain surgery was. And so I've been trying to go back to see my neurosurgeon for a long time. You remember talking about that? And I just couldn't get back in there. Well, I got to go see him, the one that did the operations and everything. And when he saw me, I caught him when he didn't know I was coming in the door. And he looked at me. Now, picture in slow motion someone walking through a door. And it's as if he saw a ghost. A dead ghost, maybe. His jaw flew open like it broke. I mean, wide open. His face turned blood red, then pale. And his hand went up through his hair all the way up top. Like, oh, my God. And that's the surgeon who did all my brain surgery. I don't think he expected me to be able to walk into the building or talk my way into the door. After so many years of not seeing me. I mean, it shocked me to see how shocked he was. It literally startled me and made me nervous.
Yeah.
I said, Dr. Audington, and he goes, oh, my God. You look good, man. What's going on? I didn't expect this, didn't he, Megan?
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, he knows I'm alive. And What I learned is he started showing me my brain scans. He said, well, this will be the last time I'm going to see you. He says, because there's nothing else I can do for you, Mr. Morgan. we did everything possible for you. There's no more brain surgery I can do for you. And he said, let me guess. You haven't seen me in a while. You still have severe migraines. Yes, I have them really bad right now. I've been with one. He said, well, guess what? I can't do anything about them, but I'm going to send you to a specialist. On my last visit, probably ever with you, because when I did all the operations I did on your brain, I did everything I could possibly do. And then he said, I mean everything. And then he began showing me some scans on his computer. He didn't have, he used to have this big thing on his wall, but now he had it on a monitor. And so he was acting very different, like, well, you're alive. First of all, I never would have dreamed that. That's how he's looking, like, what are you doing standing, man?
God, did he not have much confidence in his ability? he saved your life, but he didn't think it was going to stick?
Well, then I started looking at the images of my brain, and I go, oh, my God. They did a dual scan of my brain. I forget what it's called. It's not an MRI because I can't have MRIs. And there's a giant hole in my brain. I don't mean to scare people, but I've got a big hole in my brain. It's just a missing section of brain. And then he said, you see that? That's where you had a very, very large AVM and a craniotomy, and it was removed. I said, okay. I didn't know it looked like this. I'd never seen it look like that. They did two different types of scans and put them together. I can't remember what it was called. I wish I could remember the name. And he said, well, since they're your brain scans, I can tell you're looking at them. I'll walk out of the room. It was nice seeing you. I'm shocked you're still alive. Woo! Basically like that. And he shut the door, and I took pictures of my own scans on, and he let me control it and everything. Like,
wow,
bye, man, there's nothing left I can do for you. You're at the top of your level, as high as I can go. And I'm not joking. That's for real how it was. And so I stood there in disbelief, and Megan's standing there right beside me, and I had my cell phone that I'm talking on right now. I said, That well, it's got a good camera on. I'll take pictures. And so I've got pictures I took of my brain on the screen that are literally where you can see in the background that it's on a monitor. I say, can
God,
I have the
so
CAT scan?
That is so cool.
I know.
I mean,
he said,
I doubt any of us have seen our, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I doubt any of us, I know I haven't, but I doubt any of us got to see our scan after the fact. That's pretty cool, even though it's unnerving what you saw, that you were able to, first of all, that he left you alone, because I'd be surprised. Of course, the statute of limitations for any kind of lawsuit would be over with, but normally I wouldn't think a doctor would leave you alone with something like that where you were able to take pictures. So that's really incredible. That's a piece of history that's a permanent change in your life that you've got a photograph of that, like, you know, nobody who's been down that road does. So anyway, all right. Sorry. Go on.
I was kind of shaken up, and I could barely take the pictures, but I said, I've got to do this or I won't. I've got to have my evidence, because this is what I discovered, is that all of my CAT scans from my previous brain aneurysms, my first, okay, here's the other thing. My first neurosurgeon who trained him, and I was his first patient, his name was John Williams, I found out he died of Alzheimer's disease in the past year. And so the man who first operated on my brain, and I couldn't remember who I was, he's a dear man. He died of Alzheimer's disease. He's highly thought of in the Augusta CSRA area where we live, and all the medical places. But he passed away from Alzheimer's himself. And so to think that the doctor who operated on my brain three times the first time, and and had to come back another time and then train this new doctor who just saw me and said goodbye. It's kind of ironic. It's like, wow, Les Paul, is this your life or what? And so that's why I haven't been here to Brain Injury Radio for a while. I've been having some of the worst migraines, headaches, ice pick migraines, everything hitting me all at once for the past several months. And it's on top of the seven, I can't say it. There goes
stones,
my
your kidney stones?
Stones. The seven rolling stones. Seven rolling stones. It's two kidney stones, but there were, and one of them has been removed, and all those crazy doctor visits and everything all together made me pretty much fall apart. I mean, I'm still the same Les Paul. You know, it's just I've had all these different things constantly happening, and Megan's been having to, you know, talking about the caregiver side, Megan's been having to take care of me like crazy in between, and I've been having a lot of ringing in my ears, headaches, migraines, everything on top of that. And so that's why I had to step away from Brain Injury Radio for a while. But I'm back if you still want me. If not, whatever.
Oh, God, yes. I haven't filled your slot. No, I'm glad to have you back. I was hoping that you would get better. I didn't know, but you had mentioned that they were in a difficult location. I know people who have had kidney stones, and they tell me, I haven't experienced either, but that they hurt worse than childbirth. Such a painful thing, you know. Kidney stones are a super painful thing, but yours were complicated by the location, right? They couldn't just, a lot of times people just get them zapped and it's still painful, but they either passed or they get them zapped and that's the end of it. But for you, it's been a really long ordeal because it wasn't as easy as all that. Your location, wasn't that right? Am I remembering correctly? The location was something that made yours extra hard to deal with?
And I jokingly told when I first went in to see the doctor, I said, I'm just going to tell you up front, when you meet me or anybody else meets me, it always seems like it's something that's deeper, wider, harder to find, whatever. I seem to be an oddball when it comes to medical procedures, and I was right on the money with it because it was hard, 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 beyond hard. The doctor said, Mr. Morgan, I don't know why I get so close, but I cannot get it no matter how hard I try. And I said, try harder this time. Next to the last time, he said, I've still got to go back one more time in 3 weeks. And
I said, God.
And even though
that'd be
I have
hard
good
to get
insurance,
me back to the hospital after that, you know, knowing you have to come back again, that would be really hard for me to come back again. Are you calling me on the phone?
Kim?
Les?
Oh, I don't know why my phone started ringing all of a sudden. I don't know what happened.
Well, your phone just called me. I'm sitting here talking to you on the studio line, and my phone just lit up. The ringer's off, but the phone lit up, and it said Les Paul, and I'm like, okay, there's
a
ghost. Your ghost called
me. I'm sorry, I didn't know. Well, it must have lost connection or something. But
all right. It was just weird because I'm talking to you. Having you call while I'm talking to you is weird. Okay. Go on. I'm sorry. So odd location. And now I thought that guy, though, wait, going back to your headaches, I thought he was going to send you to some specialist. So his deal was that he was a surgeon and he did surgery, and he was telling you that was the end of his expertise. Your headaches had nothing that he could fix surgically. So where you left off before was he was going to send you to someone, a specialist,
and
that can maybe help you.
In 2 weeks, I have an appointment with a doctor he said He said, Les, I was thinking about you before you made this appointment out of the blue. And he said, you love science. This guy loves science. He said he loves experimenting around with what's new, what's the greatest, what's the scientific wonder that's going to help people with migraines and things. He says he's that kind of person. I think you'll get along good with him. It's nice knowing you, but I'm not going to see you anymore. I hope I'll see you around, but there's nothing more I can do for you. He escorted me out the door, and we shook hands and said, all right, goodbye. It was the weirdest feeling.
You know, one time, I think I've said this before, but the guy who's the go-to, because my surgeon, by the way, died too. He was a mature gentleman back in 95 when he did the surgery. And, you know, we're in 2021. So, you know, some of those surgeons have retired or died at this point. And mine did. So after some of these shows, I thought, I really ought to find out who in town is the go-to for brain aneurysms in case something ever came up. I wouldn't want to just be at the mercy of whomever, you know, at the hospital when I walked in. I'd like to make a connection. So I did, and then I was asked by the Brain Aneurysm Foundation to speak at something at our medical center, and a guy who also has a big support group, it's called Brain Aneurysm Support on Facebook, Rico, from California, he flew in, and I got to meet him, and we were both the speakers, and there was a support group meeting after. It was a new support group, and it only lasted less than a year, and now it's gone, and we're back to where we were in 1995 with no support group. But the surgeon attended that support group, and when we were all introducing ourselves and telling a little something, three-quarters of the people in the group had had that surgeon operate on them for their aneurysms. Now, what he said, and I had to appreciate his honesty in this because I had a lot of contempt for some of these people. Gratitude, they saved, you know, that my doctor saved my life. And then mine was a little different, my surgeon, because he was from out of town. And microneurosurgical techniques were new, relatively new in the beginning of 95. And he was here to teach, like this guy, this doctor I'm going to be surgeon I'm going to be talking about in a minute, and the other surgeons in town, how to do a clipping procedure. And so this surgeon in the support group that night, when it got around to him, he introduced himself, and like I said, three-quarters of the people there knew him because that was their surgeon. But what he said was, I am so glad that you guys started this support group, and it was, you know, one of the groups we know of that started this support group. Anyway, he said, I'm so grateful that you guys started a support group because just about all of you come back to me after the surgery and say, I've got problems with headaches or I've got problems with sensory overload or this, that. He was naming off some of the usual things. And he said, and what I can tell you is what we surgeons do all day is go from surgical suite to surgical suite to surgical suite to surgical suite and do brain surgery. That's what a brain surgeon does, is brain surgery. And when we're not in a surgical suite doing surgery, then they're studying the new techniques and, you know, stuff for their continuing ed, but, you know, they're basically studying the craft of what they're doing all day. And so there's a big fat period after that, that they do the neurosurgery that saves our life, but that's the end of their purview. When they do a couple follow-up visits and you get stitches out or whatever, then they are done. That's the end of their expertise. But what he did know from all of his patients, who else are they going to go to? You know, they go back to where it started, know, to the surgeon and say, I'm having all of these problems. What do I do? Well, his answer was, they don't know. They don't know what to do. And so this guy was really happy that there was a support group so we could all commiserate about how the surgeons don't do anything but surgery and that hopefully some of us had found answers or specialists or compensatory strategies or something that helped us as survivors and that we'd be able to help each other with something he could no longer help us with. And so I think that's interesting. It sounds so cold-blooded the way your doctor said it, but when this guy explained it the way he explained it, it gave me a new clarity that whether I liked it or not, I think what he was saying is true. This is their specialty, is the cutting, and when that's finished, you're finished. You know, then you're on a path. You're bounced off with a, you know, with your life onto an unfamiliar path where you're going to either just learn to cope and suffer a lot, or you're going to run into what I call the lantern holders, the light keepers of the light, you know, that are going to give some support for what we're not getting fixed or some pearls that are going to help us with our symptoms, different kinds of holistic or other treatments, maybe a magic pill. Unfortunately, none of us have found a magic pill that fixes it all yet, even though everyone wants to give us pills. It doesn't really seem like any of us have found one that's fixed everything that ails us.
No.
So we continue to trudge on the road and try to get answers. So I'm hoping, what kind of a doctor? Is it a neurologist or what sort of a doctor deals with bad migraines?
Actually, remember, I'm forgetting. He's a pain specialist is the best she remembers, and I'm forgetting any more than that myself.
No, that's right. They've got a whole field of pain management doctors. Yep.
And the thing, remember DJ? Well, one thing that he said when he had a show was that keep your medical record. And I failed to keep some of my medical records. And my doctors all told me that my records would always be there. I said, what did you do with all my medical records? And said, what medical records?
Ten years.
I'm until last year. He had one from last year and maybe one from 2 years earlier. And he said, I don't have any more. Fortunately, I do have some CAT scans at another hospital where they were checking on me, too, for similar related things with my brain. But I actually feel empowered, not scared because of it. I think it was the feeling of completion, like, okay, if you reach the end of something, what can you start with next? I mean, every single one of us lives our life one day at a time. I mean, you can't help it. That's part of life. It's either fear or no fear, or you choose to fight for something that's right or surrender and cuddle up and die. And I hope we all choose to live and do the best we can with the moment that we have at hand and help others. And that's what you're doing, Kim. That's what I love about you. You're doing that right now.
Thanks. Well, you know, part of, I appreciated when he said that because back in the day of paper files, they saved him 10 years. And after they hadn't seen you for 10 years, they got rid of him. And so while I appreciated what he said at the time, now in the age of digital, there's the whole thing of storage. And I was talking to you in a different context about that earlier. I left a message, but I'll bet you the same kind of thing happens in the digital age. You would think because it's in the computer, they'd keep it forever. But then there's the element of storage. So, you know, if a physician did a surgery on you 12 years ago and hasn't seen you since, there's a good chance, they're going to purge files, you know, because they don't want to pay $5 million in the cloud to put old medical information. But as to what you said, and my observation of the healthcare system at this time, you can barely say what you have to say in a 20-minute appointment. So I seriously doubt that even if you had gotten your records, that any doctor is ever going to sit down and read them. You know, I don't think they're going to sit there and read them. They're going to look at what you said, what you're dealing with in the here and now.
That's exactly.
They're going to ring the cash register for the hospital and do the appropriate tests. They're going to look at the results of the tests, and they're going to deal with what they see right now. I don't think any of them, and you'll be lucky. It's going to take 2 weeks for them to read the results of the test. So if you think they're going to go back and read your 12-year-old file about your original surgery, I just don't think that's going to happen. So I'm not going to say that he didn't give good advice at the time. I'm just going to say that the healthcare system has changed such that I don't think you would find a doctor that would have or make the time to go back and read all of that. They're going to deal with what's in front of them right now.
Well, I was told this, that in these times, they have a, for most hospitals, but not every hospital, is called My Chart. And I forget if there's any other word attached to it, but I think it's My Charts. And you go to that and you look up your name and medical records, and they'll help you create an account. I've actually done that through this one hospital. Since it was four different hospitals that operated on me, I haven't done all of them yet. I've got from two of them so far. I've gone all the way back to when I had my first brain aneurysm. They do state I had a brain aneurysm then. I had brain surgery, but no details. And they said no CAT scans, no x-rays, no nothing. No MRIs. They didn't keep those. They just kept the basic information. The time you were in the hospital, the time you left, things like that.
Well, and that's because when we go in and we fill out all of that paperwork, which I've done a lot lately because I was having some problems while you were having problems. So in the beginning, I didn't realize that you weren't doing your show because I had three different things in 3 weeks that were pretty serious. And I was dealing with those, the initial visit where I got a diagnosis and then the procedures that had to be done. And then, you know, one of them, this sounds like it would be the most benign, but on August 31st, I broke my foot in three places.
I'm really telling you that. Well,
and I'm still, I had the boot for almost 3 months. I was walking with this Frankenstein boot. And, back then, it was the end of the summer, beginning of the early fall. It was still warm, and so I could wear shorts and have on the boot or a sundress or whatever, and it didn't bother me. And then it started getting cold, and I was like, shit, I can't put on pants. What am I going to do with this thing? And so I did get to lose the boot last week, but the strength is, there's still a lot of pain. It's still broken. I was seeing the doctor once a month, going in there, getting these x-rays, and that's about all he has been good for, this ortho guy. I was very fortunate. I didn't need to get surgery because it was my pinky bone, the bone that holds your pinky toe, unfortunately, on my driving leg, my right leg. That bone was broken in two places, but it was still a straight line. If it would have got knocked out of place, I would have had to have surgery and pins and all that stuff. But because it was still in a Well, it stayed in a straight line, and then I took a chunk out of my ankle, too, and tore some ligaments around my ankle up to where the broken bone started. So my foot's a mess, but it didn't need surgery. It needed the boot, and I was so paranoid and careful, Dilem, that I mean, in that first couple months, because I didn't want to do anything to knock it out of place and wind up having to get surgery, you know what I mean? So I haven't driven for 3 months, and I haven't really gone anywhere or walked very far. I can't go down the basement steps. I can't, not that I run or jump a lot or lunge a lot. I was kind of laughing to myself as he was telling me some of the stuff I couldn't do that I don't do anyway, you know. Okay, no problem with that. No problem with that.
Don't be doing that.
Yeah, I've got a recliner that'll elevate my foot. That's a good thing. Got an ice bag, so that's a good thing. But anyway, last Thursday, I think it was, I went to get x-rays, and again, for the third time, and he said that it was about 70%. So, but the first time and the second time, which were a month apart, there wasn't any difference. So I was scared and worried because it didn't appear like there was any movement toward healing on the x-ray. And then I was glad last Thursday that he said it was mending, but when he said it's a process, I had no idea when they told me that day. First of all, I was in shock that that was even the case. I thought maybe I sprained it. You know, I've heard people say that sprains hurt sometimes worse than a break, and I walked on it for 2 days. I thought it was sprained. I do too. Then the third day when I woke up, my foot was the size of a football and it was black. And I said, Gary, I don't think this is a sprain. I'm in trouble. I got to go to the doctor. So I went that day and they got me to an ortho person and they stuck the boot on me. And that's where it had been for 3 months until I think it was 4 or 5 days ago. I got rid of the boot, but I've got to wear... When I say orthopedic shoes, I'm not to the 80-year-old orthopedic shoes yet. They've got some really cool. Go ahead and laugh. You know, I remember my great grandma and my grandma. I've known a few people that have had these orthopedic, and I think of, you know, the fact that I came out of the womb in stiletto heels and danced my way through the disco era, you know.
Six the same.
And
my
then
mom
when
at 80 tried to wear high heels.
Well, now see, because I pounded them so bad in the disco era, I was probably in my 40s when I had to quit wearing those, but it was like I was telling this doctor, I said, you know, my standard fare of footwear has been flip-flops and Crocs in the summer and then Uggs in the winter. You know, I've got 6 different colors of Uggs and that's all I wear. And he said, well, you won't be wearing any of those things. And I was like, what? And then he had his nurse come in and she had on these tennis shoes. Well, one thing I'll tell you is I don't hold anything against anybody else, but I have just never been a tennis shoe kind of gal. You know, I got a pair once and I didn't care for that on me. And so I didn't care for them. But the nurse came in and she had on, and I'll go ahead and plug them, I guess, for any of you out there who maybe have balance issues, you know, they show you this thing like when you're standing barefoot and you think you're standing right, and they drew a line up your leg, and the line is crooked, and then you put on these shoes that have Hoka, H-O-K-A is the brand name of these tennis shoes, and they make them in really hot colors. They're really expensive, but they do have a built-in orthotic in them, and it showed, you know, one of these tennis shoes on one foot, And then on the other foot, you were barefoot, and they drew the line, and your alignment is perfect in these hokas.
Oh, wow.
And in your bare feet, you're crooked. So you're throwing off your whole body, your spine, your hip, your knee, everything is out of balance. And that doesn't help. Now that I'm just thinking this through out loud, I was doing this because of my foot injury, but I would have to say that for, you know, people that have balance issues out there, maybe because of your brain injury, that your footwear, we've never, and I'm not going to have a show on footwear, this is it, but it'll be my 2 cents worth, is that your footwear may help with your symptoms. You know, you still might need to take classes or
that
do some other things.
That might
be a
show in the future right there.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, Bob, let's do a thing on shoes.
Yeah.
I'll have to... I'll send you these ones because I wound up getting just a regular pair. And because my foot was still swollen, and this shocked me, he said that swelling could last for up to a year.
Oh, my goodness.
And
wow. You really hurt yourself, man.
Yeah, I really didn't. I had no freaking idea. So I got to send you this thing. I don't know if you'll be able to see this on your phone now. I'll put Meg on here, too. Megan.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I put the wrong Megan. I know, too.
Oh.
Here. Now I got the right Megan. I almost sent it to a different Megan. She'd go, what? Anyway, I got a regular pair of tennis shoes before these ones I'm sending you. And I got them in wide, my size, but wide, because with that swelling and everything, he told me I could, here's what he said about the boot last time. He goes,
okay.
He said, you can give up your boot, your Frankenstein boot, but you've got to wear shoes that have support. And if you have trouble, you need to have the, put the boot back on. Well, I went ahead and got a pair of the tennis shoes, but I got the ones I just sent you. I got in my regular size, and so I can't exactly wear them yet because the first pair I bought, which were regular tennis shoes,
cool.
Same brand, those are cool, and they're going to give me the ankle support that I need because part of my ankle's broken. What I found when I bought those other tennis shoes I've been walking in is that they hit my ankle, and my ankle's broke too, you know? So while I can walk and it's got me in proper alignment, it hurts because I'm not, think about it, flip-flops, Crocs, they don't rub on your ankle. You know, they're nowhere near your ankle. And so when I put on the tennis shoes in the first place, it felt weird to have on tennis shoes. And I still haven't walked that far, but like I say, I got wide ones in my size. Yeah, and those are actually called hiking boots, and they've got a really deep tread in them. I'm going to send you the first ones that I bought. I know you guys can't see them. If anybody listening out there wants to see these, let me know, and I'm happy to show you. The ones that I got were really, the ones I just sent you are really boring, but one thing Hoka is big on is really funky colors. So if you go to their website, and they're sold in regular shoe stores too, a lot of regular shoe stores. If you look up Hoka, they'll tell you stores that sell them.
Oh, they both look good.
And well, but I was disappointed in those first ones because the ones I wanted, I would call them sherbet. They were like an aqua on top with, on that tread, they were bright orange and yellow, and they were really cool looking. And they were out of them. The thing about these Hokas is you, if you see one you like online in your size, and they make them for men and women, get them because they'll be gone next week, and then they don't come back.
That,
the supply demand, the supply chain problem or something. I don't know what it is, but the ones that I was thinking of getting the first time around before those ones you saw sold out by the time I was ready to order. And I guess it's okay because those are more neutral. But I said to them, you know, these are really bugging my ankle. They are allowing me to walk without the boot. That's good news. Happy about that. But they're really hurting my ankle because every time I walk, they're rubbing on my chipped ankle. And so I started looking on there, and I saw the first ones I sent you, and those are called hikers. And when I said something to my mom, because they have a deep tread in the bottom, and my mom said, you don't hike. And I said, what you don't understand is you do know how many pictures I take, and to get those pictures, I'm going through cornfields, you know, and on uneven dirt, and I haven't been, well, and I haven't been able to do that. See, I've been taking, we haven't been as many places to take pictures, and when I do, I just step outside the car, and I'm taking the pictures from far away. It's killed me to not be able to walk through the cornfield, you know. Well, it does. In fact, one day I walked in a field and I was in so much pain when I came back that night because the ground was uneven and I walked more than I had before and it was just real painful. So I told my mom, I said, look, I'm the one that bought him and I need some ankle support because I'm afraid I'm going to get ankle drop and hurt myself again. I'm in the paranoid stage because it's been 3 months of this process
that still isn't over.
Well, and that's what I thought. You know, somebody that gets it would get it, you know, that I'm scared. I don't want this to happen again. I want it to get well, and I need the support for the ankle. So I'm hoping the swelling will go away before too long so that I can wear those. But then I started laughing, and it was funny because I posted that shoe, and it was a laugh post on some fall trees in the neighborhood and Hootie. Mm-hmm. And this girl, woman, whatever, I still call us girls, even though we're old ladies with geriatric shoes, us girls, you know, I held up the tennis shoe and Lori says to me, those are really cool, but what I need, and I had been saying this to Gary, because we don't go anywhere. The only place I've gone, all through the pandemic, we didn't go anywhere unless it was outside. And then all of a sudden, doctor, you know, after a year and a half, it's doctor's appointments I'm going to, you know, instead of anything else, you know, that I'm, it's like, great, now I'm going inside and it's to freaking doctor's appointments, you know, but they're all, we're still wearing masks and stuff, you know, in the doctor's office. But anyway, I've been lucky and haven't picked up anything there. But the girl said, Lori said, what I really need is slippers because that's all I wear. And that's what I said to Gary when I got these new hikers. I said, the tennis shoes and these will be great when I'm walking, but this isn't something you just slip into in the house and wear them around. At least I wouldn't. What I need are slippers because we don't go anywhere, and that's what I'm wearing all the time. Plus, you know, winter's coming. I'll be inside more even. So I found a pair of a different brand today. I'll just, as long as I brought this up, I'll throw it out to you guys. Two places, one called orthofeet.com. Orthofeet.com. They've got a lot of different kinds of men's and women's slippers, snow boots, regular shoes. The thing about Hoka is they're primarily tennis shoes. And then they've got their hikers, which you just saw. But other than that, that's pretty much their niche is athletic tennis shoes and, You know, a lot of people get who are athletic, which I didn't qualify for that, but, you know, they get stress fractures and things in their feet and ankles.
I could see
so,
Kim Fatter's footwear distribution center. I'm playing.
No,
I'm sorry.
Kidding. Well, no, I mean, it is funny. You got to find the humor in these things, whether it's
I couldn't help but
brain injury
that.
Or whatever. I'm telling you, you know, I can't think because of my brain injury what the other is, but OrthoFeet's one of them, and then there's another one like that. There's two different sites, and all of their shoes, they actually have different kind of shoes. They've got sandals and snow boots and slippers and a whole line of different shoes, and they all have built-in orthotics. So the old days where you'd go in and they would melt to your foot an orthotic of your foot, and it was very hard and uncomfortable. I did that once back in 1977 between high school and college. I broke my femur bone, and you know, your legs are already uneven when you're born, and then if you have surgery like I had, it's even more so. So I was having backache, hip ache, all that kind of stuff, and he suggested I get an orthotic, and that was something. The good news about that is after you spend $1 billion and they make one specifically for your foot, you can take it out and put it in any shoe. But they're hard. Cool. At least they were back then. They were very hard, so they weren't comfortable. So you were aligned, but it wasn't comfortable, you know, at all. And so now some orthopedic doctors have actually created or had the great idea to endorse a few shoe companies to make shoes where the orthotic is really built into the shoe already, and then it has a nice, you know, maybe fleece inside or whatever it would have inside. The tennis shoe feels like any other tennis shoe. Whatever. The boots feel like any other boots, but they feel different. The first time you put on a healthy shoe, it takes some getting used to, but they make your alignment better. So anyway, that's really all I got to say. That was more than I wanted to say on it. But I just didn't know. It's kind of like, you know, with all this stuff you're talking about, different, but I mean, you'll get what I mean. And the other two things I had, when I got a diagnosis, it was one procedure that was super painful, and then that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. With the foot and what you've been dealing with, and with brain injury, it's a process, not a destination.
Yeah. Yep.
And you have no freaking idea at the beginning what
you've
gotten yourself into, you know, how long it's going to take. You know, when she said the swelling could last for a year to one degree or the other, and that the arthritis I already have all over my body is likely going to set in at some point, you know, to my ankle and my foot, you know, that's the good news to look for in the future with these kind of injuries, like with, you know, we talk about with brain injury. Younger, you know, that sometimes when we're older, that can turn into Parkinson's or dementia or Alzheimer's. That, you know, if we thought I'm going to lighten it up after this, but, you know, we thought we had it bad all this time, but it can actually get worse, you know, later on by morphing into another kind of brain disease, but and hopefully that won't happen. But that's the kind of thing when you break bones and do things like that, is that if you were prone to arthritis before, then chances are, you know, anything that you've broken or hurt is going to wind up getting getting arthritis in it later. But anyway, just been taking it a day at a time, and now that I can walk a bit, there it's too cold. It's too cold to go out walking.
Oh.
So, but it's okay. I'm glad it's getting better at night. It always hurts worse because obviously whatever walking I do, I'm doing in the daytime, and that's when I'm vertical. So, you know, in
you
the evenings.
My goodness. Wow. I'm glad we're both two warriors here among warriors, you know.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, what's the option? I don't know. You know, like you said, we go through it, and I don't know about you, but on things like what you are going through and this 2 months that I had where everything was going on at once, my foot and two other things, I really had to take it a day at a time. Because I thought of feeling the way I felt for an unlimited amount of time, I don't know if I would have gone crazy or what I would have done, but I had to just look at it. I just want to get through today. You know, we'll deal with tomorrow when it comes. You know, and then I used to think of that old prayer that was really kind of a horror story when you think about it. Remember that prayer? Now I lay me down to sleep.
Yeah.
What was the rest?
That's the way you said.
Pray to the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Now that's really kind of gross when you think about it. Who tells a child that? If I die before I wake, I can see that being very comforting to a child. Now, aren't you glad we weren't parents, you know, that we would have to sit down and abuse our child, our tiny little innocent child, get on your knees, we're going to say our prayers, now I lay me down to sleep, blah, 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 if I die before I wake, what the hell would you tell a child that for? A child going, why would I die before I wake?
That was funny. Oh my goodness!
Well,
you still got to laugh and joke.
As it turns out later on, if you die before you wake, you're lucky. You didn't have to suffer. You know, you're just gone. But you're gonna groom a little tiny child who says, "Why would I die before I wake?" Well, you won't. But we're just saying it in this prayer because they've been doing it for
we're warning you of it
generations. Yeah, and if you're lucky, that'll happen to you when you get older.
You watch in the mirror because we're coming after you. Oh, boy. That was a good bad one.
Well, I was just thinking of that. I'm like, God, that is a weird thing. Gary and I were having this philosophical conversation the other theological conversation the other night. I won't go into that, but it was kind of funny. I'll have to tell him tomorrow about remembering that prayer that, you know, we used to say before bed. What a horrible thought to put in a child's head before they go to bed. I can see him laying there when the parent leaves and turns off the light and they're laying there.
All night tonight now.
Yeah, they're laying there. Am I going to be awake when I die in my sleep?
No.
And they're going to take my soul. Where are they going to take me when I die in my sleep? We'll have to have someone explain that prayer to us someday.
Well, Megan told me to interrupt for a second and say, how's Matt doing? We haven't heard from him in a while. Our friend Matt from Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota Matt. He's doing well, Meg. Well, you knew. One thing you might not know, though, is that you know that he is from Minnesota, obviously, and that he was living in North Carolina. Well, they moved back to Minnesota, so he's living in Minnesota again, and he and his wife had a place. But then they wound up, and this was really a cool deal, I thought. Well, not this part is unfortunate, but there was a family home with several acres and a pond in a quiet part of Minnesota, and it's where his grandparents lived. And so his mom and her siblings, you know, his uncles and aunts and so forth, grew up in that home, and it had been the family farm / home. And his grandparents, who had been together 60 years, passed away just a couple months apart. And Matt and his wife wound up buying the family farm. And so now they've got, I think it's really cool that they were able to keep a family home in the family, I guess, by them living there. And the whole extended family will be able to keep coming, even though the grandparents aren't there anymore. And then, of course, everybody puts their touches on things. There is some upkeep that, you know, was needing to be done. But he sent me pictures, and there's a bunch of outbuildings there and a really pretty lake. And so, you know, they're living in the family homestead now, or they bought the family homestead, which I thought was really cool. He called me FaceTime one night and gave me a tour of the house.
Cool.
And then some of the outbuildings and the lake at sunset. And they've got a little guest house thing. He invited us, and I'm sure you guys, if you ever were going to go to Minnesota, he's very welcoming, a guest house that someone Aww. Could stay in. And but right now, this minute, he is down in Nevada. As you might remember, he's
yes.
a poker player, semi-professional poker player, and there was a tournament going on in Nevada, and I don't know why he didn't wait till it, well, I know, because the tournament's going on now, duh, but he and his wife went down there for a month. I was going to say, to beat the cold weather here in the Midwest, it would be good to go stay in Nevada for a month. So I was thinking, why now? It is colder, but it ain't near what it's going to be. And I'm sure they'll go someplace else when that comes. The neat place about, you know, buying the family farm there is his wife is able to telework. Oh, and one other thing you might not know about Matt, Megan, Les, is that in his travels to look for what he wanted to do, he wound up buying a food truck. There was... up in his neck of the woods, there was a man, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, but it was a burger food truck, some kind of burger. And they were famous in that area where he lives. You know, the guy had the food truck for a million years. And whenever there were ball games or concerts or special events, this guy was always there with this truck. So it was very recognizable, you know, to people in the area. And the guy was getting ready to retire, and Matt's a good cook, and he was looking for something to do for a living. Real estate didn't really wind up in his thing, so he bought this food truck. And so he drives around and goes to concerts. This was the end of the season, and so he packed up his food truck in one of the outbuildings of the new family farm for the season, and him and his wife took off down to Nevada, where he was in poker tournament, and hopefully he's not selling the farm at the poker tournament, but hopefully he's cleaning house.
Back.
Yeah, Yeah, I wish I could think of the name of it, but that was really lucky, you know, if you were thinking of it, just because, you know, of the other person doing it for so long that it was recognizable, like you'd see whatever, say Billy's Burgers, that's not it, but but you recognized it because you saw the truck all the time, you know, from the time you were young. And then when you were older, every time you went to an event where there was a group, you know, the Billy Burger truck was there. And so he's done really well because it was recognizable. And so between his food truck all spring, summer, fall, he's doing that. And then they bought the farm this year, so he's very handy, which they're lucky as far as handy around the house and being able to build things and paint things and fix things. So they're updating the farm from
he's a big success story. Are they all together of a brain injury survivor? That's awesome.
Yeah, they really are. So he sent me some pictures from down in Nevada. He said that he was doing good and it's warm down there and they've been traveling around and haven't really, but yeah, he's doing good. And I was really happy for him. I was sorry when he was real close to his grandma and grandpa, and I was really sorry when they died. And, you know, people who've been married for 60 years, that tends to happen. You know, they died within a couple months of each other, so it's hard on the family to, you know, people who have been there forever in your life, and then a boom, you know, they're both gone. But that's why it was even more special that he and his wife were able to buy the family farm, you know, and it had been in the family since its inception 65 years ago or whatever, and it would have been sad to have it go to strangers. So that was pretty cool. I mean, his mom and all his aunts grew up there, and the cousins and the whole family would get together, and now they own it, so, and live there, so that's cool.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, this has been great tonight.
He's been sick. Matt Duffin has had some really bad issues. When she first said Matt at first, anyway, Matt Duffin, for those of you wondering, and I don't know a lot of details, I really owe so many people a phone call, and he's one of them, but he hasn't done a show for a long time. He's been really, really sick, ongoing sick. And so, you know, our thoughts and prayers go up to him. But I will have another show and be back. Because you said it earlier and we were talking about it in the prayer, there's a song I'm going to play out that's Craig's. And I want to thank our sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, and THEE, the letter R, insane, TheRInsane.com. One of the ways, you know, we've never asked for donations to keep the lights on around here, but one of the ways that Craig's done it is by touring with his band, and COVID has ruined that the last 2 years. And so they did a final, they were ending, and they did a final three album, I'll just use my old age verbiage because I'm running out of time, but a three album set. And that was going to be their final tour. They did get through the three album set, and so their band has been under a couple different names over the years, but TheRInsane.com. One of the things you can do if you want to help support the network, you know, when songs are $1.60 and the company keeps 40% and the artist gets 60%, what is that? They're getting paid 50 cents a song and they got to split it with the band and the recording studio. And, you know, they're
like
in the hole. Exactly. So if you're so inclined, you know, and you ever do want to give a donation to Brain Injury Radio, you can get a hold of Craig or I. We are a nonprofit, and so
and
it would
should,
be tax deductible. It'll be tax deductible to you. Want to make sure to get that in. So if you like what we're doing here, you can always get a hold of us directly for that. But if not that, then I encourage you to go listen to some of his songs and buy a few if you like them. It helps to keep the lights on around here. And Les, it was, I will be back next Wednesday with Simon, who's speaking of illness, my last Wednesday of each month co-host Simon, who hailed from England, he's been with me for a couple of years now, hasn't been with me for the last 3 months because he's had some very serious health issues. But he's going to be, I think next Wednesday is the last Wednesday of the month. So that should be welcoming back Simon. And then the next day is Thanksgiving. So in the event I don't talk to you, happy Thanksgiving to you and Meg.
To you too.
And me. Anyone who won't be here next Wednesday, I can't believe that we're into the holidays. You know, with COVID, it just seems like the last couple of years have been a blur to me because health issues have come up and changed with my parents and things that I used to do. You know, my life as I knew it is different. You know, I haven't been to everything is on Zoom. You know, and then when they started meeting, you know, they had their the first DAR meeting since the virus started, thinking it was safe, and I didn't go because my foot issue was going on, and now I thank God I didn't go as much as I wanted to. Five of those women got COVID.
Oh, wow.
From that meeting. And so COVID's very much alive just because the focus is on the vaccine. One thing, because it came up the other day, I just want to say real quick, and then I want to get this song in because I think you guys are going to like it as we go out and maybe encourage the listeners to check it out. But you know, the vaccines, I know there's been a lot of controversy over the vaccines. I got the vaccines and the booster. I was heartbroken to be hearing about these breakthrough infections. And out of the five who got COVID, three had had their vaccines and two hadn't. And so it just goes to show you that the usual protocols, I just want to remind you, whether you got your vaccine in the first place or not, there are a lot of people who got their vaccine and thought that protected them. And the thought was that you wouldn't get it as bad and die or be in the hospital with severe of consequence. But you know, a flu shot doesn't prevent you from getting the flu. The COVID shot doesn't prevent you from getting COVID. So this is a good reminder as we're getting colder in a lot of parts of the country. Things are moving inside. You know, we had started taking off our masks and trying to go back to living our life outside, but now people are going inside where the ventilation isn't as good. And I encourage you to go back and remember the basics of washing your hands a lot, carrying sanitizer, don't touch your face, you know, when you're out, wear your mask, even if you've had your vaccine, because you can still pick up the virus. And viruses stay with you. You know, I got I'll just make this quick, but for example, you know, the virus that you get from chicken pox is the virus that becomes shingles later on. And I've had shingles twice now. And so viruses don't go away. So even if you get COVID and you get a quote-unquote light case of COVID, once you've got the virus, you've got it. So, and you don't know when and how it's going to rear its head. So I would just encourage you all as we're going into holiday season to be safe and to remember, again, whether you've gotten the vaccine or not, to remember the basic protocols of distancing as much as you can, maybe not staying inside in a group of people as long, or maybe reconsidering going. If you've got a number of events in a row, you might want to skip a couple, not that you couldn't pick it up in one like they did in that DAR meeting, but the more you expose yourself, the more apt you're going to be to pick it up. And the more you are handling things and touching your face and not remembering to sanitize or wash your hands in between, this thing isn't over yet. So I don't want to end it as a downer. I want to end it just as a, I love you. We've all been through a lot. We've faced so much, and we don't want this taking us out. So there's some basic protocols to follow, and I hope everybody will remember that. So for many of you, I'll see you next week. Earlier, Les and I were using this word, and then we were talking about a prayer, and so I'm going to close with the song Ghost by The R Insane. And I don't know if you've heard this, Les, but I find when I hear this, it's one of those when I get off and quit listening where I'm doing, and you'll know what I'm doing when you hear the song. So good night and God bless everyone. Great to talk to you, Les. I'm so happy. Thank you that you came tonight. And Megan, you as well. And Ron, it's great that you dropped in, and I'm going to ghost us out. You'll hear yourself singing.
yourself to stop to suck someone now. Have you ever been down before so low? You just want to overdose yourself. Say you tried so hard, but life's way too tough because the brains you got given weren't large enough. So you try to get by working 9 to 5, full-time boy shit for the rest of your life. It sounds like you, well, you just like me. The only difference is I found a reason to be free, like the birds in the sky or a fish release. Free like the sun setting over the sea. And I feel so high, just can't help it. Ask myself the reasons why I'm blessed with a life so full of benefits. That I'm gonna keep on walking down my road
can, and I know you can.